You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, on the floor, David Goss. We put down some carpet squares this weekend. It's nice and comfy down there. And out in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle. Boys, how we doing? Everything good on this fine Monday?
Everything is fantastic.
Fantastic?
Yeah, what could be complained?
I
guess there are 50% of Major League Soccer fans who could complain right now.
That's true. That's
but
true.
I feel pretty good.
You feel pretty good. I led you in there. Acting like everything was okay, but everything is not okay because I had a morning that I wish Simon Borg was here today. He is in he's in Europe somewhere, I think. He's on vacation because this is the sort of situation.
Well, before we get there, I just want to say that I've seen the Simon Borg suck the soul out of you over the last like 6 hours. You've been trying to do instant replay in his stead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he does is that he takes some of your life source as you do it, and that recharges him for when
he comes
back.
This is probably why he did this, why he assigned me to 2 in a row. I did do instant replay. It is a doozy this week. You should go check it out on MLSsoccer.com. We will also wrap up Heineken Rivalry Week, of course, and the U.S. roster is out, as well as Canada. Headed to San Pedro Sula, that Central American city of nightmares. So we will talk about all that in the second segment because the international break is coming up this weekend and early next week in CONCACAF. A lot to talk about there. Of course, the weekend was big, but I have a little bit of conundrum here. Before we get started, I'm riding the subway this morning. As I always do, it's a little bit crowded. 2 trains go by. I can't get on them. I get on the A train. I'm standing there. It's very, very crowded. Everybody's a little bit grumpy, as they are. A pregnant woman gets on with her with a toddler. She's carrying a large bag. She's struggling with the movement of the train and the crowded aspect of the train. There are a number of adults all sitting, all averting their eyes.
Are you one of those adults?
I'm not. I'm standing, and I'm steadily growing angrier by the second as she struggles with everything that she's got going on for obvious reasons, and yet no one stands up. And the Midwestern in me both was furious, because get up, and I didn't do anything or say anything because I'm too polite, maybe.
Yeah, you're definitely too polite.
So what's the answer? How do I go about this? What would I have done? Doyle, you're the obvious person to ask here. You've got got a little anger in your heart. Do you let it
That's
out
true.
There? Do you let it out?
Yeah, you leave New York is what you do. You get out of that mess because it's totally uncivilized.
How are you going to change the world if you run away, Doyle?
On the BART, do people stand up every time?
Because New York is not the center of the world. First of all, we're civilized out here. We always have seats on the BART. And of course we get up and we give our seats to the elderly or infirm or pregnant women. Because we're not savages. New York is just... I think for your own good, gentlemen, I think you have to get out of there. Maybe sunny South Florida, David.
That all sounds soft.
I just don't understand why then you guys are all revolving around us if we're not the center of the earth.
I'd say for the most part people do get up.
I
think
agree.
That's why we don't come and start every show with this conversation.
Sure. Which but is yeah, why it really affected me.
You have to say something. You start out polite. You say excuse me to someone.
Right.
I think maybe you should get up. And then when they say no, that's when you let it rip. That's my favorite part of the day.
What I like about this whole conversation is that you let the miserable part of this story actually pass you by without even a comment. And Weeby just dropped it in there like it was nothing. You had to stand there on the platform and let 2 completely full trains go by before you could even get on and start your commute.
Yeah.
How insane is that?
It was
so miserable.
It was a tough day. And this was also maybe where my anger came from. And I just couldn't believe it. There were people, and I'm not making judgments here, there are people reading the Bible and using that as a way to avert their eyes. So, it was a tough morning.
And you know how Midwesterners deal with their anger. They have a nice vanilla milkshake.
And they
maybe
stuff it down inside and let it fester until it comes out in podcast format. Well, that was my morning. If you have any advice on how to handle these situations, hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. This is one of those days where I wish Simon was here because he would have... he would have come hot with this.
You know he would have come hot in the opposite direction, too, because that's what he does.
Who knows?
He would have been like, how has she earned that seat?
Oh, turn it on.
I've never seen anyone have to get
I don't
want to
put words in his mouth on that side. We'll see what folks have to say if they have anything to say at all. I've vented. I'm good now. Let's jump right into Heineken Rivalry Week, and let's start with what I think was the best game of the weekend, which was Portland-Seattle. For obvious reasons, we built this thing up a ton. There were a lot of playoff implications. The red line was hovering in between them. And Seattle had just beaten the Timbers. That was not to happen in this game. Clint Dempsey, of course, not playing in this. I'm sure you saw the news. He is being evaluated by the doctors for an irregular heartbeat. He is out for last weekend's game. He will not be with the U.S. national team for World Cup qualifying. We're not sure how long he will be out, to be honest. They have not released any additional information. So we'll get to that in just 1 second. But Portland 4, Seattle 2, a great first half for the Timbers. Fernando Adi is back, and that really, really matters for this team. They go up 4-0, and then they coast in the second half despite some pressure from the Sounders. And most people said they made a statement. What kind of statement, Doyle?
I think this was the single best half that the Timbers have played as an MLS team. And look, part of it was the Sounders just kind of being out of gas and obviously on some level emotionally affected by the absence of Dempsey. But this was the Sounders this was a Timbers team that we expected to see from day one with Adi just carving such a wide swath up top and Valeri doing Valeri things. And then the third guy in, Lucas Milano, played like a DP in this one. And when he does that, I mean, there aren't a lot of teams better than the Timbers. And the problem this year has been that he doesn't do that often enough. But he was fantastic on Sunday. And it was just completely comprehensive for about 80 of the 90 minutes.
There was a push in the second half from Seattle, and you thought for a second, Dave, that maybe they would get back into this and they'd make it interesting. A really nice ball from Nicholas Lodero to Jordan Morris was probably the highlight of that. Like, you can't give this guy space. If you give it to him, he will pick it out. And Jordan Morris, we've seen, is maybe not the most efficient finisher, but he will get the job done in big moments and has shown that for Seattle so far this season. Roman Torres came back. That's also big for the Sounders. I just want to get your thoughts on this whole Clint Dempsey situation. I mean, I think, obviously, first of all, it's all about his health, and we want him to do what's best for him and his family, and I'm sure that he will do that in conjunction with the Sounders and the national team. But this affects Seattle. This affects their playoff push, and the games will go on, like it or not. How big of a blow is this right now?
I think it's huge. I know that Lodero's been massive, but that's because he was the cherry on top of everything that was built. Taking out Dempsey is a large part of the foundation that was already there when he came in to be big. He's another guy that you don't know what you're going to – defenses can't have to adjust to him because he's creative, because he has different ideas. He can find different areas of the field. It allows them, I think, to key on Lodero more. A few of the other guys are a bit more simple, or like Jordan Morris, more straightforward players.
Direct,
and,
perhaps.
Yeah, and that it's a massive loss. He's, you know, the leader of the team. He's the best player on the team. And I don't know. I mean, the draw in Houston is also huge. We discussed it a little bit on Thursday, but we were all talking about them picking up 4 to 6 points, and they picked up one. And now, with their games in hand, if they were to win them, they wouldn't pass Portland. So Portland's back controlling their own destiny, which we thought they wouldn't a week ago. And I think that's huge. I think Portland saw that Houston result, and we're like, okay, now it's time for us to take care of our business as well. And it just takes out some of the steam where it was like, there's no way Seattle doesn't make the playoffs a week ago.
It felt like a runaway train at that point. Not so much right now. The Sounders, 31 points from 26 matches. They're in eighth in the Western Conference. The Timbers are in sixth. They've got 35 from 27. If they were to win their next game, however, they would be tied with Sporting Kansas City on games played as well as points. So they're right there. The San Jose Earthquakes, a tough result this weekend. They have 32 points. They're in seventh right now. But for Seattle, a really demoralizing loss in a lot of ways, especially based on that first half. And look, it's got to be demoralizing to see your star, the face of your franchise, really, and Clint Dempsey have health issues that we're not sure how will affect him long term. Certainly short term, he is not with the Sounders. He is not with the U.S. national team right now in Jacksonville.
And you mentioned Milano stepping up, how big it is. Nelson Valdez is invisible, if not negative, with throwing the ball at the assistant referee. And he's not helping. He's not filling in that role in any way.
I don't think you'll see him get suspended off this one. I covered an instant replay. We saw Breck Shea and Andy Nahar in the past get suspended for these things, but he didn't hit the guy. I think it'll probably just be dissent. The yellow card will have it be – that'll be the punishment and they'll let it go. But look, him being suspended might not have been the biggest blow for them right now. He is not producing for Seattle. There was a brouhaha on the 401 Derby, and there's no surprise about that. When Montreal and Toronto get together, when the stakes are this high, the tempers start to rise. And this was an interesting game for a lot of different reasons. The big news on Monday centers around Giovinco. He is out for 4 weeks. He's got an adductor and a thigh strain, I believe. I think suffered on a tackle in the box. There's a tackle of some sort. I can't remember. He goes down. It's 0-0 at the time. It ends up being 1-0 Montreal, who at that point are down to 10 men because Callum Mallis gets sent off for a shoulder check on Steven Betashore. But this is, I believe you tweeted peak TFC, Doyle. Is that about sum it up?
No, I mean, this is what Toronto have done over the past couple of months. Whenever they've had a man advantage, they have found a way to not get the results that they wanted. I mean, they were off two men against San Jose a couple months back, and they lost that one 2-1. They were up a man against Houston, and they drew that one 1-1, and were kind of lucky to do so. And this team, honestly, they went into the weekend as, I think, the leaders for the Supporters' Shield race, not in terms of points per game, but in terms of just having the best schedule and having the best chance. And they exited arguably maybe 3 or 4. This is tough, you know. I think they tasted it a little bit, and they came up short, and that is peak TFC.
It is. Ignacio Piatti with the goal in this match. This is just what he does on the break. He is a genius in space, and he's a genius when he's got you running backwards. A great goal from him. And Montreal celebrated this one very heartily because I believe it's their first win at BMO. So that's a big deal for them. That's a big deal for their fans for sure. I mentioned, though, Giovinco. That's a huge blow.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit fortunate maybe because the international break, but it's not just Giovinco. It's Ashton Morgan, it's Jay Chapman. There's some injuries they're going to have to deal with here.
If the Giovinco injury is 4 weeks, which is what they're saying, then he'd miss 3 games. But one of them is versus the Red Bulls, which is a pretty big one in however the Eastern Conference is going to fall out, or maybe even the Supporters' Shield. The one at Chicago, I mean, you'd love to have him, but you think you can maybe win that game without him. I find it interesting when you watch some of these teams play, though, against when they're man up in situations. We've talked about it a few times. There are a lot of teams in MLS that aren't ball-dominant teams. They like to play on the break. They like to play in open space. And when they go man up, you're required to be ball-dominant because the other team's not going to attack. They pack it in, and not a lot of teams at times have either enough movement or a guy that can just pull something out of nowhere and create a goal. And it hurt. It's like, I don't think anyone would ever say no. I don't want the man advantage.
Right.
But TFC might be the first team ever to say, no, we'll just keep it even. Let's see how it plays out.
It may not play into their hands. This is another one that you'll want to go check out on IR, that Callum Mallis challenge. A little bit of a shoulder check. There is some disagreement about that one.
That's a red card.
Yeah, I think it's a red card as well. I think he sizes him up, gets his shoulder into him. I think that's the right call in that one. There is one thing we do need to mention before we get out of here, and you might have seen the tweet from Toronto FC this morning, Monday morning. They apologized for what I will just call a disgusting, uncalled-for two-stick tifo by one of their fans at BMO Field. I don't feel that I should or need to describe this. If you want more information, you can go find it pretty easily out there. But it was sexist. It was disgusting. It was unacceptable. And I don't think that it. I'm really at a loss for words as why somebody would bring this in a stadium. So. Don't cross the line. We've reminded you of this a lot of times over the last couple months, but it bears repeating. Don't cross the line. Be respectful in stadium, out of stadium, wherever you are. Let's move on now. Orlando 2, New York City 1, the final match of Heineken Rivalry Week on Sunday night. There was a downpour. I didn't know if they were going to play the game. I mean, that poor national anthem singer was looked like she had gotten like a dump truck of water on her head in the middle of the anthem, but she powered right through it. So did Julie Stewart Binks. Props to Julie. We need to get Julie on the show, by the way. She tweeted at me the other day. We will get you on this show, Julie. We'll find that time. Maybe to, you know, just to give you some umbrella advice. But Kaká got it done. Jason Christ said after this one, in this league, you need your DPs to be DPs. You need them to be difference makers. And Doyle, that little shoulder shrug, that little move to get around
Mena.
Yeah, Mena. That is vintage Kaká. When he got in that position out wide, I thought he's getting to the end line. And he did, and he scored.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Kaká does. It's not look, it's never the most spectacular move that you're ever going to see. He's like a robot. He just makes the right choice and the right play again and again and again. And that wears you down. And when you make a mistake, he is always in the right position to capitalize upon it. And this was it was a captain's goal and it was a captain's game, because Orlando City needed this one in order to stay in the playoff race. That's why you spend the money on a guy like Kaká.
That is why. I think that final playoff space out east, that's probably the last one truly up for grabs. I know most teams have, seven or eight games remaining, but Montreal with
You're talking about in the east.
In the east. Right. Montreal with that 5-point lead over DC in sixth and Orlando City right behind them, and then New England kind of trailing back behind that. I think there's maybe three teams that fight for that sixth spot. I think it's DC, Orlando, and New England. I would be shocked if it's not DC and Orlando down the stretch, and I would be shocked if it wasn't DC.
I'd be shocked if New England was in that conversation coming into the last four games of the season. I will disagree with you. I think that Orlando has a decent look at this. I like the way MPG slotted in so far. It's been a positive that Jason Christ doesn't have to rely on Breck Shea right now at all. A little bit more consistency around the team. Obviously, it comes down to how much they have Kyle Larin and how much Kaká can stay healthy. But I like what they're putting together. I think, similar to what we saw in Seattle, that rebirth under a new coach of just another opportunity, a breath of fresh air, has been really big for them.
We will see what happens. They're chasing six. You mentioned New England. It's not going well for Revs fans right now. A 1-0 loss to the Red Bulls early on Sunday. BWP, 61 career goals. He's got 16 this year. He's pushing to be among those names at the top of this league. When you say who's the best goal scorer in MLS all time, he's pushing at that. And I don't think that's not an overstatement, Doyle. That's real talk at this point, right? I mean, he might get the best three-year span for goals in this league, and it might not actually be close if he keeps rolling along.
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, I think the best three-year span is Wando from 2010 to 2012. He had 18, 16, 27. BWP is now at 27, 17, 16. So he's one behind Wando. Not only that, no one has ever scored 20 or more goals twice in an MLS career. Wando hasn't done it. Jaime Moreno didn't do it. Landon didn't do it. Four more in the last, seven or eight games for New York, and Bradley Wright Phillips becomes the first. It is staggering to me that he has been so consistent and so good over these 3 years, because he was the exact opposite of that coming into MLS. He was a guy who would have one good year and then disappear for a year or two, show up in a new place, have one good year, disappear for a year or two. I don't know what he found here. Obviously, Thierry Henry had a big part to play. Sasha Kljestan has had a big part to play, but Bradley Wright Phillips deserves all the credit he's been getting. And you have to wonder, if he had come from an actual civilized soccer country instead of England, how much more he would have been valued on his home front.
Ooh-wee.
It's just really surprising. I didn't realize Henry was playing in Major League Soccer this year. But I guess he is, because Bradley Wright Phillips can only do well if Henry sets him up and makes him do what he wants him to do.
Yeah, look,
I was unaware that Henry was in the league still, but that's really cool.
His legacy is being sealed right now, and I think the final piece for it is playoff success. MLS Cup, that's what the Red Bulls are shooting for. They got a big point in this one to take them into third in the Eastern Conference, just a point back of NYCFC, both on 27 games, and just three back of Toronto FC, also 27 games played. Sasha Kljestan was one of those called up to the national team. He wasn't in the initial roster, though. He got called up on Monday. John Brooks was sent back, or not sent back. He just didn't come. Still having some back issues, Brooks. Even though I saw him play for Hertha Berlin this weekend. Yeah, that's a little bit weird. But Sasha's there. We'll talk about that in the second segment, no doubt. Can I just throw it out to Alex Mule? Because, wow, he beasted Gonsalves in this game, and that's what led to the goal. So props to him, a great rookie season so far. Let's talk Rocky Mountain Cup. 2-1 RSL over Colorado. Tim Howard with a brilliant PK save later on in the game, but it didn't matter. It was two goals for RSL and just one for the Rapids, who are kind of in a little bit of a, I don't know, it's not a fade. You still look at their points per game, and it is a fade. Who am I kidding? It's a definite fade. It's just not the level of form they had at one time, but still 1.72. Is there reason to be worried, Dave? I mean, they're just kind of holding steady. They're just holding the line, saying this is what we are. We're still going to be top three in the West. hopefully
Doyle
we get a bye.
There's reason to be worried for them. I think less, because I think we've had this conversation before. I thought RSL had a few moments of brilliance, but this was the worst Colorado's defense has looked in a very long time. The offense is not there. They're not getting what they need from Doyle. Gosh, he created some stuff in this game, obviously got the goal. But Jermaine Jones is the deciding factor. Now, we're going to talk about that in the second segment.
We are.
I don't know what he's doing anywhere near U.S. national team camp right now. That is insanity. And if I was the Colorado Rapids, I would, I don't know, throw water on the runway so that the plane couldn't take off or whatever you have to do.
I don't know that that keeps planes from taking off. I think that might not be the most effective
Everything
strategy.
Everything else felt like the NSA might tap. And
right. I don't think the Rapids are going to hire you as a consultant for that.
No.
Yep. But just back away. But, yeah, we will talk about that because it's a little bit strange. Yurimov Sisson with a big game here. I did think the PK he missed, the way he earned that, I thought that was simulation. I thought that should have been a yellow card. I didn't like that. That looked like a pretty big dive to me. But Doyle, we got, I mean, Patty Mullins, I just feel like I'm out here throwing you softballs. I just, you know, underhand, right into the wheelhouse. Patty Mullins cranks it out. I will say after this hat trick against Chicago Fire and DC's 6-2 win this weekend, does it really count for a full hat trick if it's against the 10-man Chicago Fire?
Ooh.
Does that actually count, or is that like 1.25 goals?
It's actually a fair point. I will say this. Chicago has actually been pretty decent defensively throughout the year, but they completely fell apart after Kali Cham had that absolutely ridiculous and petulant red card, and they had no answer for the movement of the entire DC front line. It wasn't just Patrick Mullins. I mean, Luciano Acosta probably played his best game. Patrick Nyarko. Look, we said it last week. Patrick Nyarko, if he could finish at all, would be in, you know, he'd be playing in like Spain or Italy or something. He's that good a chance creator. He's that good with the ball. And we saw it. I think DC gave themselves a shot, a real shot at making the playoffs. And I think more importantly for the fans there, with Mullins and Acosta and Jared Jeffrey and a few of those other guys in the 23 to 26-year-old range, they see a future for this team. They see a core that they can move forward with. I think that was lacking a couple months ago. And whatever happens, wherever they end this season, whether it's sixth or seventh, because it's only going to be one of those two spots, I think you need to tip the cap to Ben Olsen and Dave Casper for doing what they've done on a shoestring budget.
Doyle,
nobody gets less to play with in terms of salary space.
This just popped in my head when you said his name. And did you have a hot take about Luciano Acosta on Twitter? Did you?
Yeah, no. I mean, I still think that Acosta is – he's a lot of fun and he makes some nice plays. The end product is not there in the way that it is for guys like Valeri, for guys like Kleschen.
Right, but who were the guys on DC that you said were better than him?
Oh, I still absolutely think that Julian Boucher could end up being a better player than
But it's not right now.
No, not right now.
And did Colin Martin get some conversation in here?
Well, Colin Martin's been hurt all year.
Oh, okay.
It's almost like, you know, your memory just seemed really fuzzy, Dave. And
it popped
it was,
in my – no, yeah, I didn't really read it, obviously, because I didn't put it in the rundown because it just popped in my head. But I remembered at one point over the last 24 hours having this, like, physical revulsion to some comment about Colin Martin and Luciano Acosta.
Look, I will say this. I think Acosta's good, and I think he's a lot of fun. I don't think he's a top-end playmaker in this league. And the thing is, I don't think an American kid would get the number of chances to prove what Acosta's been able to prove this year. And I think, I mean, that is at the heart of a lot of the frustrations I have with this league. Now, it's probably misplaced because nobody has done more or given more American kids and Canadian kids the benefit of the doubt than Ben Olsen over the last 5 years. So I probably completely off on this. But I think that, look, we've seen it with the Patty Mullins thing. It takes more for an American attacking player to get the benefit of the doubt in MLS than it does for guys from Argentina or Brazil or, you know, parts elsewhere.
True. Let's speak about a couple of those guys because the Chicago Fire apparently have discovery claims on them. Let's see. Guillermo Rivera at Fire Confidential is reporting that the Fire have interest in Bastian Schweinsteiger, who Grant Wall says that's also true. And Rivera also says they have a discovery claim on Andres Guardado. I heard a team in Atlanta might be interested in
and
that
And they have the discovery claim on Schweinsteiger.
Right.
that was the other
part. Right, there's multiple parts there.
So they have the first option if they can make something
winding
happen.
Roads have brought us here, but we've those are good assets.
Well,
those
we've said if they can get central midfield help, those are both guys that can play in the area. Neither of them is the true playmaker, but I think both of them coming to this league can get
if they could convince Guardado to come to Chicago, that would be a huge signing for them. That would be absolutely massive. Texas Derby. Houston 1, FC Dallas 3. It looked like Houston might grab it, Alex, with a banger. That's like the only kind of goal he scores. A little Meg job, a little another touch, then the left-footed hammer blow into the top corner. A great goal from him. But Barrios, didn't you say last show that he's not a – didn't change the game. He was
perfect timing.
Was a tool
I love him as a player. I said I thought he was the most underrated player in MLS, and then he just had a couple really bad games because this is what he's capable of.
Yeah, Oh, man, you brought it back around.
Brought it all the way back around.
Redirection.
Because this is what he's capable of. The first goal is direct from Figueroa, and he puts on the Jets.
What a ball, though.
And has the clean touch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That ball is incredible.
And Figueroa has played very well for them. That was a really good pickup for them, a veteran guy. A guy who knows, you know, Central America pretty well as well for CCL action. And then the second goal, Tesho does decent work. He beats one defender, lays it off, though. When he lays that ball off, he's in no way deserves an assist at that moment in time.
He's not done
anything to help someone create a goal.
I'm
going
to tweet that at Tesho because Tesho, he's on Twitter. He's following. He knows. I slided him a couple weeks ago, and he favorited it or hearted it or liked it.
And then Barrios curls it to the far post. He's phenomenal, but I don't know. Maybe it's not the same thing you're saying about Acosta, but he's not a consistent game breaker.
Right.
He can't consistently do it game after game.
Are we just looking for holes in FC Dallas at this point?
Oh,
are
probably.
We just like trying to find holes? Because
but that's what you do.
A little bit, but like, wait a minute. If Barrios is your second best attacking player, I think it's fair to pick that apart a little bit. Is this guy good enough to be your second best attacker on like a multiple title winning team? In years past, I don't think so.
And if anything happens to Max Rutti, who we're not even sure is good enough, Tesho Akindele and Jederson are your two starting strikers. So there are holes there.
No, I agree.
But I don't think any team right now in Major League Soccer is as good as the top Supporter Shield winning teams that we may have seen over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
But I felt like we said that about New York last year. So I don't know what that means either.
Right. Big game this weekend. Dallas hosting Portland. You want to tune into that. We'll talk about that on Thursday, of course. A couple other results to run you through here real quick. Philly 2, SKC nothing. A couple red cards in this one, both of which I thought were probably not deserved. Jimmy Madronda as well as Roger Espinoza. Rogers, Peter Vermees says he's going to appeal. I would guess that he wins that appeal because I don't even think it was a foul on Roger Espinoza. But Roland Alberg, this is what he does, man. He's a game breaker for the Union right now. It doesn't matter if he starts or comes off the bench. He's a potent weapon for them, and it's looking good for them right now. A really, really good result for them. If they can get that back line figured out, they might be right there in the East as one of the maybe one, two most complete teams in that conference. So a good win for them in this match. Columbus with a big win. They needed this. They really, really needed this. It's second and three for Crew SC. They knock off San Jose, who are kind of listless. And that meant a change in the front office. John Doyle let go after 9 years as general manager. We will talk about that in the mailbag. We got some mail on that one. So that's where we will tackle that one. And then LA Galaxy with a 0-0 draw with Vancouver. Vancouver keep on, doing whatever they do to not get results that they like. Yeah, plodding along. Good way of saying that one. A lot of injuries for the Galaxy. Steven Gerrard, Yael Van Dam, Jesse Zardes injured. Did not go with the U.S., but real quick before we get out of here and go to the U.S. roster, Nigel De Jong about to be sold perhaps. Doyle, you've been kind of digging into this afternoon.
Yeah, it started off as in one of those obscure papers in the Netherlands, and it said he's going to be introduced by Galatasaray, the Turkish league, tomorrow, Tuesday. And then Taylor Twellman confirmed it. Well, not all the moving parts, but said there's definite interest. Kevin Baxter, who's a local guy in the LA market, for the LA Times. He's confirmed it as well. He tweeted out this afternoon, the Galaxy won't confirm or deny the story. They say he's in LA, but Turkish media says he's going to be introduced by the club in Istanbul on Tuesday. MLS is not confirming it, and they say they haven't been told of the deal. Of course, MLS HQ would have to approve the deal. The transfer window in the Turkish Super League closes on Thursday, so they do have a couple of days. And then the question is, why would they do this? Well, Robbie Keane wants to come back next year. He's a DP. Gio Dos Santos will be back next year. He's a DP. If De Jong returned next year, he would be the third DP. De Jong is about the 10th best D-mid in the league. It doesn't make sense to spend a DP slot on the 10th best D-mid in MLS. I think no. Obviously, I think Bruce Arena probably thinks no as well.
And this is fantastic business. You sign a guy on a free, and then you sell him for something. That's what you do in the world of soccer, and that just makes sense.
And MLS, you got to generate that GAM anywhere you can, because a lot of times it's not easy to come across unless you do a lot of losing or you pick it up in trades and give up an asset. So if this goes down, I think you'd have to say it's great business for the Galaxy. That's the wrap on the weekend. Anything you want to know, you want to ask, you want to take issue with? At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. We come back, U.S. roster and Canada headed into their own house of horrors.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help. Back now on Extra Time Radio. I'm Andrew Wiebe, Dave Goss, Matt Doyle also here. This is the theme song from that 7-0 beatdown in San Pedro Sula.
Ooh.
Help! Canada need anybody, somebody. They're headed back to their own house of horrors. On Friday, the U.S. is headed to St. Vincent to take on St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the Vinci Heat. Maybe the best CONCACAF nickname? It's close. There's a lot of really good ones. You get the Soca Warriors on the next Tuesday. I mean, what is the best nickname?
Wow.
Just kind of stumbled onto this one.
You can't just throw the one. Spice Boys is that.
Spice Boys? Is
yeah,
there? Really?
That's who did Charlie.
Canaleros, I think is
who
good.
Who did Charlie too? Joseph play for?
Granada.
That's the Spice Boys.
Ooh. That's a good one. Yeah. I like that
that's
one. If you have any out there that you want to throw our way, we would love to talk CONCACAF.
Los Catrachos, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Los Catrachos are very good as well. There's a lot of good ones.
El Tri is not a very good one. I thought you hear that they're calling the four Mexico players at FC Porto the four-headed dragons because FC Porto are the dragons.
Yeah.
Sounds cooler in Spanish, but
it
still
does.
A cool nickname.
Sounds way cooler in Spanish. That game against St. Vincent the Grenadines is on Friday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on BN Sport here in the United States at 5:05, I believe, is the Canada game in San Pedro Sula against Honduras. Let's talk the U.S. first. The roster is out from Jurgen Klinsmann. 26 players. It does not include, as we said, Clint Dempsey or Giassi Zardes. We will learn more about Zardes' injury sometime this week. The Galaxy were off on Monday. It had 13 MLS players to start. Then John Brooks stayed in Germany and Sasha Kljestan came in. So now it has 14. You look up and down this list, it is basically, in large part, the Copa America squad. I believe 19 out of the 23 or so got called into camp.
What's interesting, though, is of the four, three are starters, right? So Dempsey's not here, Brooks isn't here, and Zardes isn't here. So even though it's not many changes, it's still going to be a lot of changes.
Significant changes. Yeah. Look, Jonathan Brooks is a big loss, and I think the U.S. is okay at center back, especially for this game against St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Remember, all they have to do to move on to the Hex, that's what we're worried about right now. This is a semifinal round. It's the final two games of the semifinal round. This will decide which teams go into the Hex. If the U.S. can beat St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and then Trinidad and Tobago beat Guatemala, the group will be decided. Trinidad and Tobago and the U.S. will move on to the Hex no matter what happens on Tuesday in Jacksonville. So that's the whole goal here. That's what the U.S. is going for. And that's why Jurgen Klinsmann went with a team that is basically old hands. Guys he knows. Guys he knows what he'll get out of. Guys who know where they'll play. Guys who understand the system, or as Doyle may say, the lack thereof. You look at this roster, what are we going to see against St. Vincent and the Grenadines? What are the Vinci Heat going to see on this cricket pitch on Friday?
I think the number one question to answer out of these two games is, can Jose Altidore and Bobby Wood play up top together? Because, you know, we learned a couple of things over the course of the summer, one of them being Bobby Wood is actually really, really good. And he reinforced that point by scoring a goal in his first Bundesliga game for Hamburg this weekend. And we also reinforced that the U.S. still plays best in a 4-4-2. And that 4-4-2 was Wood and Clint Dempsey. But Clint Dempsey's a different type of forward. He's not a center forward. He's not a number nine. He drifts back in possession and helps the midfield. He can drift out to the flanks. He could do a little bit of different sort of combination play through the middle. Josie and Wood are both really kind of number nines. I mean, they do it a little bit differently, but they basically play the same spot in basically the same way. Figuring out if those two guys can get on the field and complement each other, that is, I mean, obviously mission number one is winning the games, but it would take literally the two worst results in U.S. men's national team history for us not to qualify for the hexagonal, so I'm just going to assume we're going to get those wins. So beyond that, the number one thing for Jurgen Klinsmann is answering that question about Josie and Wood, period.
I'm pretty excited because, in my opinion, the best Josie Altidore has ever played for the U.S. national team was alongside Charlie Davies. Now, Bobby Wood is not the same player as Charlie Davies.
And very similar.
And he doesn't have the same speed exactly, but they both play in a similar way. What Wood brought to the national team this summer was similar to what Davies brought out of nowhere. The ability to stretch the field, give room to operate underneath, a direct outlet if you need one. So Josie's become a much better back-to-goal number nine. But I still think he likes to pick the ball up and look around and connect with players and come underneath. And I sometimes get frustrated with Josie because I don't think he makes some of the hard runs to be the first option on crosses. And Bobby Wood can do all of those things. And Josie can find the game in other ways. And I think Josie's developed enough over his career to be that player. And this is the future because Clint Dempsey, we're talking about the heartbeat and all of those things. But he, either way, his career is on the back end. Thought it was done 2 years ago, and it wasn't. But this future has to come at some point, and this could be the two strikers that you line up with going forward. And I think that there's a potential for it to be successful.
But there is a void to fill. Clint Dempsey is the man when it comes to scoring big goals for the U.S. Yeah. When they need one, he scores one. And so somebody's going to have to do that. This may seem easy because it's St. Vincent and the Grenadines. It's the Vinci Heat. You're playing on a cricket field, yada, yada, yada. Well, they're playing in the afternoon because there's no lights.
But they have struggled.
This is CONCACAF, man. Yeah.
Well, they have struggled in the Caribbean under Jurgen. I mean, Brad Evans had to save them in Jamaica. They grinded themselves down in Trinidad and Tobago. They barely beat Antigua and Barbuda, whatever it was, last qualifying cycle.
Right.
So, no, he has not been very good in the Caribbean. They've gotten the results, but they have not been impressive.
And here's where it kind of gets a little bit, not shaky, not iffy, but it could be. If they don't win this game and it comes down to the final match day against Trinidad and Tobago, a team that I think most people would agree that they should beat just about any day of the week in just about any location, their place in the World Cup could come down to that because you got to make the hex, period. You have to do that. So this is a big game on Friday. There's no doubt about that. They need a big result in this one. Sasha Kljestan is back since the first time, I think it's since 2014?
Yeah,
I believe,
yes.
And he's generally the guy when these rosters come out, or at least one of the guys, that people on Twitter and, you know, blowhards like us sit here and say, oh, where's Sasha Kljestan? Why isn't Sasha Kljestan in the team? Well, apparently Jurgen saw the team, or he saw the numbers that he had, and he decided he needed Sasha. He brings him down on this Monday. It was kind of a late-arriving thing. Red Bulls tweet out, hey, some big news is coming, and then this thing goes down. We'll find out a little bit more about this as Kljestan gets into camp and we get some access with Jurgen on Tuesday. How do you explain it, Doyle? Why did this happen now? If you're looking at it from the outside, and obviously you're not inside Clinton's brain, and if you were, oh, that would be interesting.
No, it would be a house of – you talk about San Pedro Sula house of horrors. That thing's insanity.
And to add Doyle into that mix? Why? Why did this happen?
I guess this is the same thing with Omar Gonzalez. It's if you do it with your club team, then you get called in for the national team. I'm not sure how some of the other players fit into that metric, but at least this is Jurgen behaving along the guidelines he has previously stated are his blueprint. And Sasha Kljestan has 29 assists over the last 2 years. Since since MLS changed the assist rule after 2003, tightening it up, making it a lot harder to pick up assists, no one has had as good a two-year run as that. Not Landon Donovan, not Brad Davis, not Steve Ralston. Nobody has done as well in terms of raw chance creation as Sasha Kljestan. So he's earned it by his club play.
One thing to tap on to the end of that, Michael Bradley suspended for the first game.
As is Michael Orozco.
Right. Yep. So I think Michael Bradley, though, the Sasha Kljestan addition makes a lot of sense because he can play deeper or he can play farther forward. An experienced central midfielder, something that you'll probably missing in that game. Let's go back to the Jurgen Klinsmann insanity for a second. I don't get that frustrated with Jurgen Klinsmann, I think, compared to a lot of people. But one is, if you produce for your club team, you get called up, except that Omar and Sasha have been producing for their club team and weren't getting called up. And there's no logic to anything. And let's now talk about Jermaine Jones. He hasn't played since July 4th. He's hurt. His club team needs him. You need him to be playing for his club team. He probably can't play in these games, and you call him up. I don't understand. Unless you think that your medical team can see things and understand things that other people can't, which may be true, which is a problem on its own, then there's no reason that he should be coming to
these games. We've known Jermaine has been on the brink, so to speak, of returning for the Rapids for a while, but they've been playing it really slow with him.
He hasn't gone full training yet.
Super slow with him. The logic that I was told and passed on was that this was a situation where they're going to evaluate him. They say, why not? Why not bring him in? We want to take a look at him, and if he's ready, who knows? Maybe he gets into a game. But if
and
I'm the Rapids...
It's not just that, though. It's look at the guys that we're ignoring right now.
Yeah.
Alfredo Morales starts in the Bundesliga. He started for Ingolstadt this weekend. He's not there. Lyndon Gooch starts in the Premiership. He's not there. Danny Williams starting for Reading in the Championship. He's not there. Guys, it boggles my mind. Like, I get that Jermaine Jones is a big personality and is important for everything that Jurgen wants to do, but he's been hurt for 2 months. And we have guys literally in the best leagues in the world who are starting, who play roughly the same position, and they're not getting a look.
And
I don't get it.
And that's why I
if you're the Rapids, you can't be happy. You can't be happy about this. You need him. They have a game this weekend.
And this was
they go to New England, so you have to imagine there's no chance Jermaine Jones would play in that.
But this is a large part of why New England didn't re-sign him. Because, yes, he's great when he's there. When is he there? And that's the issue. Is
8 games.
Right.
8 games this year.
Injuries are something that happens. But if there are injuries happening and you're constantly flying to L.A. or going to the national team when you're not playing for your club, then what are we employing you for?
Yeah.
You're just a figurehead of the team.
It is a question of who is number one, I would say, for Jermaine, is the question I would ask if I was the Rapids. And they need him back. They desperately need him back. He's a leader for their team. We saw how well they played with him. We'll see what happens here. I'm not saying that him going to the U.S., I don't think any of us are saying that him going to the U.S. is going to negatively affect his health unless they push him back in before he's ready or he pushes himself back in before he's ready. I can't imagine that would happen. But we've seen people come back from U.S. camps with injuries before, just a couple.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so that's probably true. You can imagine it. A quick note on this roster before we move on to Canada. Most of the faces that you know are here, but there are some young guys. I don't think they will travel with the team to St. Vincent. They will travel on Wednesday. They've got a hop, skip, and jump on like 5 different planes down there. So it's a pretty interesting journey.
They have to take 19 small planes from Barbados to get to St. Vincent. And the
Paul Areola from Tijuana. Caleb Stanko from FC Vaduz in Switzerland is here, and then also Rubio Rubin.
Actually, in Liechtenstein. FC Vaduz is a Liechtenstein team that plays in the Swiss Super League. Yeah, right?
Also,
Caleb Stanko was injured this weekend. He got injured,
right,
and he's still going to U.S. national team camp.
Well,
I don't know.
It's all a little bit strange. Let's talk Canada before we get out of here. They, as I said, they go to Honduras, and they got El Salvador after that. They got a really good chance to get in the hex, Dave. I mean, this would be a really big accomplishment for them, but they need to get a result in Honduras, and that – as we've seen in the past.
From looking at the table, my understanding is if they get a draw in Honduras and then beat El Salvador at home, most likely they will go through because Honduras heads to Mexico in their last game. Now, Mexico won't have much to play for, but it's the Azteca, it's El Tri. It's a good chance that this Honduras team, which is not as strong as the teams we've seen, they had a great Olympics. There are some young players coming through, but there seems to be a drop off after the golden generation of 2010 heading in towards 2014. Espinosa is a good player, Nahar is, but there isn't the same stars that there was when it was Pavone and Guevara and, you know, David Palacio, all the players. So Canada, at some point you got to get the result. No one's going to hand it to you. And I personally think, as a fan, you want it to happen, right? You want that glorious moment.
A little
moment,
bit of payback, yeah.
Right where it happened. They didn't call up Will Johnson, which is an experienced player, so that makes a lot of sense on top of all of this. But I know Canada fans don't try and get too high because they don't want to fall too low, and I'm that way as a fan as well. But as an outsider, I'm really high about this, and I'm really
stoked. I'm jacked. You want Canada in the hex. I think it would make it really interesting for a lot of different people. What are the odds?
Although Honduras would be a big loss.
No, it would. It would. There's no doubt about that. What are the odds, Doyle? What can we reasonably say?
We're talking like sub 10%. I just don't think that they're going to go down and to San Pedro Sula and get the result that they need. And part of that is Benito Floro. Like he's done a good job of, I think, reintegrating a sort of defensive scheme with this team. They are very hard to break down, but it's come at the expense of any sort of creativity and any sort of desire on his part to play creative players in midfield. And so everything has to be a smash and grab, and that is not a sustainable way of qualifying out of CONCACAF or really any other confederation.
On the flip side, though, if you want to go on the road and get a draw, that's what you want to be. You want to be a team that's tough to break down. It's going to be hot. It's a 5 p.m. Eastern time, which means it's, you know, sun will still be up there. We know how the grass is at San Pedro Sula. We know how slow the game can get. And
Don't drop anything. You might lose it.
Well, you're not going down to score goals, but that's not what you need. You need to get a draw. You need a result. You need to get through the first 45 at 0-0 and then come out of the locker room with a little bit of confidence.
A big semifinal round qualifying in CONCACAF. On Friday, on Tuesday, all the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. We will have a big preview, a much larger preview for you on Thursday. We'll see you then. In the meantime, we're going to go to the break. We'll be back with the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Me importa que duermas con él, porque sé que sueñas con poderme ver. Mujer, ¿qué vas a hacer? Decídete.
Let the beat drop on the mailbag. Enrique Iglesias leading us in. Another David Gast favorite. He's queuing this one up from the floor, where he looks very, very comfortable in his new carpet squares. Matt, the armchair analyst, with us as well. I'm Andrew Wiebe. We're into the mailbag. Before we get rolling on your mail and tweets,
I have something to
say.
Yes.
You really do, because you cut that Enrique. Like,
I did cut that Enrique. I could throw it back on. I'd be happy to
just
speak
have that
over
be,
it.
Have that be just kind of the background music to wherever we're going with you right now.
So because you said we were thinking about what song to pick, and you were like, what have I been listening to lately? And I was thinking about what I've been listening to lately.
Okay.
And DMX was on my mind, and I didn't know why. And then I remembered Doyle. We were hanging out on Saturday, myself, Andrew, and a few other people, and we were playing something called the celebrity game, where everyone writes a few celebrities' names, you fold up the paper, you put it in a bowl, and then you and your team, you have to get them to guess the names on the sheet of paper. Someone opens up a piece of paper, and they point at Andrew Wiebe, and everyone looks around, they don't know what to say,
God.
And then someone goes, Andrew Wiebe. Someone in their room, as their celebrity, wrote Andrew Wiebe on a piece of paper.
Clearly mocking. I mean, all the impressions were like, you know, people with terrible
Wiebe,
no.
Wiebe, wait a minute. Wait, how often do you get recognized when you're out on the street by civilians?
I mean, out on the street, that doesn't happen.
Fairly often at soccer games.
At soccer games, yes. One time in Chinatown, my guy from D.C., man, I'm blanking on your name, but if you're listening, shout out. That was I saw him again recently, too. Where was it? I can't remember. I'm sorry. But I just don't have a great memory.
Right. For sure.
I swear. Yeah. But we also – Arambe was one of our celebrities here.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how this was all going. Let's jump right into the mailbag here and just leave that celebrity status in the past. We mentioned John Doyle being let go as the GM of the San Jose Earthquakes. We had a number of emails from different folks saying, hey, give me a little context here. He's been there forever. I'm not really sure what this means in the grand scheme of the franchise. There was a quote that came out that this was a tactical change, basically. Dom Kinnear is the head coach, as we know, and Dom Ball is kind of well known in this league, the 4-4-2, very hardworking, very honest. What do you make of this change, Doyle? Why did this happen, and why did it happen now? Because a lot of people are looking at it and saying this timing is a little bit strange. Yeah, they're fading a bit in the playoff race, but still, midseason, kind of bizarre.
Yeah, it's look, Dave Cavill, who's the president of the Quakes, said, first of all, this was not a mutual parting of the ways. This was a termination. John Doyle was fired, which you don't often see in these types of situations. I mean, just think about it with Ziggy Schmid last month. Second of all, he said straight up to our Quakes beat writer, Jeff Lepper, and the folks on the conference call, this was because we're not fun to watch. And the reason we're not fun to watch is in part some tactical choices, but also because we biffed like the last three DP signings. Simon Dawkins has not been great this year. Matias Perez Garcia was not the right fit and was traded for Darwin Serrin. And Innocent Imahara, who, spoiler alert, is still on that team.
You said it. Who?
Yeah,
you just
right,
could have
exactly.
Stopped right there. It just could have been who?
He is he's been one of the great DP busts of all time. And so you're left with this team that's bereft of creativity, that doesn't put any value on having the ball, that, bends in 1,000 crosses. And it's not fun to watch. They're 1-2-4 in their last 7 home games, and their only win in that time was against, when they were with 9 men against Toronto FC, and it was a terrible mistake by Alex Bono. This is a team that's in crisis, and I think the only surprise here is that the front office finally recognized it and finally made a change, because I think the fans' impression was that the ownership and that, the president, Dave Cavill, weren't actually paying enough attention to care enough to make this kind of change.
Doyle, let me ask you, and I don't say call for anyone's job or anything like that, but we read a letter from Houston ownership 2 weeks ago and an email from Houston fans about Dom Ball a week ago, and now this is another conversation at a different club that he's now at about style and tactics and entertainment. Is this a little bit of heat as well on Dom, or is this a change in the league? Because he's one of the most successful coaches of all time.
Or is it simply a fact that Dom doesn't have the tools he needs to make something work?
I think it's probably all of the above. Look, that team that he had in Houston 10 years ago actually was in San Jose first, and then in Houston they won a Supporters Shield in 05 and then 2 straight cups. They played a 4-4-2, but it was a diamond. It was good, attacking, attractive soccer. But he had Dwayne DeRosario and Brian Ching and Stu Holden and Brad Davis. He had good technical players. And then that team in 2011-2012, they actually led the league in possession. They led the league in chance creation. They didn't bend in a ton of crosses, and they got to MLS Cup in 2012. Some scrub scored a goal in that game. I forget who it was.
Guy wears a helmet or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But then they just got beaten by a better team. That team played good, attractive soccer. This team over the last couple of years has not done that. And they not only have they not done it, but they've not done it with old players. They've taken guys who are mostly over 30 or at least in their upper 20s. There's no sense of building for the future. All that stuff I talked about in the first segment about Pat Mullins and Luciano Acosta and what the DC United brain trust have done, and a lot of the stuff that I think the Chicago brain trust have done in trying to rebuild, that hasn't happened in San Jose. Look, they entered the season with 2 35-year-old center backs and said, well, you know what, if these guys stay healthy throughout the entire season, we have a chance. And guess what? These guys didn't stay healthy throughout the entire season. But Clarence Goodson has barely played. Victor Bernard has went down injured as well. I don't know how much of that is John Doyle, how much of it is Dom Kinnear. Clearly, Dave Cavill had his answer, but Dom Kinnear's got to start getting his answers as well. And full disclosure, I know Dom a little bit. I love the guy. He's one of the funniest and nicest guys, and I am openly rooting for him to get it right, because I think it's a better league with him in it.
We will see what happens. I believe that for a lot of teams, the Chicago's of the world, on and on and on, January is going to be a really big transfer window. That's going to be an important time for reinforcements, for setting up for 2017. San Jose and Chicago, though, both still chasing playoff spots. It's not over, certainly not for the Quakes, but their form has to improve.
And you can't, if you're a part of these teams, say, well, you know, the big teams are starting to spend and blah, blah, blah. Because there are all sorts of teams successful in MLS, but you have to be pointed in your movement and you have to be good in your scouting and get guys that maybe other people aren't noticing to be good.
But or get guys that fit your system and your way of playing
right.
that you've laid out.
Which, for example, may actually be what happens with Matias Perez-Garcia. I don't know that he's going to stay in Orlando, but he's been better over the last few games for Orlando than he was for a long time for San Jose because he's fitting in well under Christ.
But even that, like, look what Atlanta did by signing the Hector Villalba, the winger from Argentina, a 21-year-old attacking DP with experience in the Argentine Primera. Like, that makes more sense than signing a guy like Matias Perez-Garcia, who was 30 when he got here. And it's like, okay, I guess our window of opportunity is maybe 2 years, but we're not building anything for the long term. You know, like, maybe beat teams to beat – was a – Monterrey that Albert Elise signed with, that great young Honduran striker. You know, like, these are the guys. If you're San Jose and you're not going to, you know, compete for signing the likes of, like, a Jovinko, a guy on $7 million a year, at least you got to get it right with the younger guys from Latin America. Because if you can't do that and you're not going to draft well and you're not promoting guys through your academy, you are straight up not going to compete in MLS any longer.
And look, Simon Dawkins has had some great moments this year in MLS, but that was not there was not a lot of imagination that went into that signing. That's a retread for them. That's a guy who had his best years with them multiple years prior, and you're harkening back to the Goonies era and a guy that wasn't even the primary star on that team. And, you know, just guys that aren't performing at the DP level. Jason Christ said it. To be successful, there's not that many guys that get this designation. There's not that many guys that you say, he's a difference maker. When you have an opportunity to sign one, you probably got to get it right. A big offseason for them. Let's jump into the mailbag. What you got?
Well, I think we're about to go into another fan base that's a little unhappy. Zachary Roberts tweets at us. He says, I'm a Crew SC fan and a Berhalter supporter. However, at what point should I start questioning the tactics being used? Feels like there's no hope. Is it tactics? I mean, what's the question right now that you see as the biggest issue?
I mean, look, they had so much change this year that it started badly and then it just got worse as things compounded themselves and went downhill. I think that the new center back they have is actually pretty good, and they're getting Gaston Saro back, and that's pretty good as well because this defense has given up so many opportunities. I don't think it's the style. They were all about this style last year. They were on top of their game last year. Yeah, they still gave up a lot of goals, but they scored a ton of goals. I just think they had a lot of changes this year that threw them off, and I think this roster is going to need some turnover here because Tony Chani, I don't think, is going to be the answer for them long term. It hasn't worked this year, and he's been an inconsistent player so far in his career, and I love his game when he's on, but it hasn't been on enough this year to be worth it for them. And I love Will Trapp as a young player. He got another concussion this weekend, and all of our thoughts go out to him, and hopefully his recovery is smooth from that. But I think this offseason they're going to have to take a lot of looks at their roster and say, who are guys we stick with for the next 2 or 3 years? Who are guys that we maybe have to move on from now or flip and get something from? I don't think it's the style. I think there's a lot of different circumstances over the course of the year that just hasn't gone their way. But I think there's also the fact that a lot of guys just haven't performed. Last year we had a lot of guys at the top of their game. This year we haven't had a lot of guys reaching their potential, I don't think.
I agree with you 100%, especially because the style actually changed a little bit from last year to this year. The Crew crossed the ball like 30% less, and that was true even before they got rid of Kai Kamara. What happened is that they weren't getting the productivity that they needed out of the wingers. I think Ethan Finlay and Justin Merriman in particular are both international caliber players, and they've been showing it, and so they've been winning. And earlier in the year, they were not creating or finishing chances like they have in the past, and so the Crew were not winning. And this applies to the back line as well. Michael Parkhurst has had a nightmare of a season, and I know Crew fans have focused on that. I don't think the media have maybe focused on that as much as they could have. He's the captain. He's supposed to be their best defender. He's needed to play like it. Until recently, he has not.
Let's move on so that we could initially offend us and then answer a question.
Okay.
Paul Costa, will the vapid Jordan Morris hype train give him Rookie of the Year,
choo-choo,
or will facts/performance give it to Keegan Rosenberry?
You know what? I don't think there's some huge gap here. And I know that Keegan Rosenberry has been great. He was especially good the first half of the season so far. I don't think he's been as good maybe for the last 10 games or so.
Okay, so before you move on with that point, because we had it in the rundown about Jack Harrison, who's hit a wall as well.
Mm.
And someone around the office was talking about best rookie of the year. Tsubasa Endo's name got mentioned as well. Is there a rookie that hasn't hit a wall?
Ooh.
I think Rosenberry has maybe only had like two or three bad games, whereas Morris has had more ups and downs. But to me, if you're a rookie walking in and scoring 10 goals, 5 assists, which is what it looks like Morris will end up with, you're probably the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
And I say this as I was the first guy, I think, pumping up Keegan Rosenberry back in you know, March and April. And I say this as someone who firmly committed to the idea that fullbacks are people too, and they get overlooked far too often. And Rosenberry is probably the most pro-ready fullback out of college since Steve Cherundolo. He's been fantastic, but it is just not the same as walking into the starting lineup, which Jordan Morris did, and scoring double-digit goals, 5 assists, and being an attacking centerpiece. I don't think it's a vapid hype train. I think it's 100% the guy living up to expectations.
I think you also think about in these senses, it's not just about, hey, you played a really good game at right back, or hey, you had a great game at forward. It's the level of, there's more to it. There's more to being a professional athlete. There's more to doing any job. There's pressures that come in different places, and there's different things that you have to, you know, you have to put on your back and carry. And for Jordan Morris, think about the expectations that he had this year. Think about the pressure he's been under. Think about the dissection of every cross that he was 6 inches from getting to,
about 6 weeks of being the center forward with no Clint Dempsey and no Obafemi Martins.
People are game planning for him. Nobody's looking at Philadelphia saying, how are we going to neutralize Keegan Rosenberry?
I mean, there's a huge difference in that. And there's a different weight of expectations you have to deal with. And as a rookie, when you're able to go out and do it, and by the way, it hasn't all been roses for Jordan Morris. He didn't go to Copa America. He had some disappointments. He had a lot of people saying, this guy can't finish, this guy doesn't have a left foot, ourselves included. It's different. And when you're able to deliver on some of that and do what is ultimately still the hardest thing in this game and the most important thing in this game, which is putting the ball in the back of the net, that matters. So I don't think it's fair, but I'm with you, Doyle. We'll see what happens. But I think if you're an MLS fan, you got to look at this rookie crop, and you have to be really, really happy. And you have to pay a little bit more attention to the super draft next year, because there are guys that come in and make a difference. There are guys that come in and are starters, and there's been a good number of them this year.
And on the men's side, the college season just started last week, and there's a lot of lists out there you can find, even homegrown guys that your club may have that potentially could be coming back that you can check out in college. Let's finally put this thing to bed. Jake Hall, this Modge/Hodgepodge thing has gone on long enough. Modge equals glue. Hodgepodge, an idiom meaning a confusing mixture. We also got this tweet from Ryan Bruckman saying a confused mixture, sent us the definition screenshot of hodgepodge. It says a confused mixture. He says, honestly, it's almost the show's mascot. I think maybe it should be.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, and actually, the great 80s cartoon Bloom County had a character named Hodgepodge. So there you go. That could be the show's mascot.
Maybe like Dave and I's face right now should be the show's mascot. Yeah. So when you make a reference like that, we weren't even born. It's just like wide-eyed and like stupid grin. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Let's finish up here on one last email, and it's about Miami, because the biggest issue he sees when he's talking about expansion, which we've talked about for a little while, is
– just a while.
Is the issue I see is how realistic is it for Miami to join in 2018 – the stadium, everything else. What is the backup plan if Miami can't get things nailed down? Does Sacramento's phone ring? Do we just have a weird schedule for hopefully 1 year and only at LAFC? Does Miami get a team, split their stadium? What is it that they do?
I mean, I don't know what they would do. I don't think that 2018, it doesn't feel all that realistic right now, right? I mean, there'd be a lot of work that would have to get done in that intermittent time. I do think that the MLS and Don Garber and Mark Abbott and everybody involved, including the ownership group out there, has been very clear about this is who we want. This is who we prefer. We want a team in Miami, and we want a team with David Beckham in Miami. And he's got an ownership group around him that he thinks he can do it. They've made some progress on the land fronts. Has it been as much progress as people want? Has it been as much progress to sit here and say, yeah, 2018, we'll be watching them play in a brand-new stadium? No way. No chance. But I do think that preference has been established, and I think that even if it doesn't hit 2018, that won't change. Now, do I have any insight on how the direction might change? No, but I don't see MLS walking away from Miami unless they absolutely have to. That's a market they absolutely want to be in.
Let me ask you this, Gasman, since you are a South Beach regular and you know the area very well. If NYCFC can play at Yankee Stadium, why couldn't Miami, Beckham, United, Real, FC, Evergrande play at Florida International University?
Because
they have, like, it's a beautiful 30,000 seat stadium. It's accessible to, you know, to public transit out there. It's right off the highway. Why is that not possible?
Well, I'd give you a few responses. I'm not saying it's not, but if you're going to devil's advocate me on this conversation, one is you've already had a failed product in Miami, and so you have to be
wary. No. You had a failed product in Fort Lauderdale.
Right, but that will be the point is, oh, wow, you're starting again in the wrong place, in the wrong location. You also have a smaller population, so New York City, if you do something wrong and no one shows up, that still might mean 30,000 people show up to a game because it's a larger population of people that are potential to. Those would be my two responses to that. Not saying that that's a reason, but I just think we've seen over the past, you want to start the right way. It's fine playing another stadium for 1 year because, like Orlando will get, or Philly got, but theirs opened up halfway through, you get that bump when you reopen the stadium.
If you have the you know, something on the horizon.
Right. So you get the initial bump of becoming a franchise, then you get the secondary bump of the stadium opening and the excitement being there. Let's close out on Cleveland's last statement in the email. He says, saw you guys in San Jose working hard. Well, actually, Doyle was eating. Weeby was on his phone trying to ignore Borg, who was half talking to him while Borg was also on his phone, which sounds exactly like what they always look like.
Yeah.
And I don't remember seeing Gasman, but I couldn't see the floor around you guys from where I was standing. Thanks for the hard work on the podcast.
I don't think you were there on the floor.
I probably was. That's where I normally found.
I think that was pre-floor.
Oh.
Yeah, that was back in the chair
days. I wasn't laid out on the floor hanging out?
No, that was in the chair days. So you would have seen Dave had he been there. Big thanks to everybody who wrote in. Big thanks to the listeners as well. Thank you to you guys. Matt Doyle, David Goss, I am Andrew Wiebe. We hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll be back on Thursday. Until then, we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.